We started a new series last week. It's called In the Garden, and we're taking a new look at the story of creation from Genesis 1 through 3. And it's a story that we're all familiar with, right? Even if you didn't grow up going to church, you know the story about how God created the world, and he did it all in 7 days, and then there was this garden, and that's where a lot of the action takes place, and there's Adam and Eve, and they're in the garden, and all kinds of stuff happened there. But the reason we're looking at this is because we need a new look or a new perspective. And oftentimes, we said last week, the problem when we come to this story is that it raises all these questions about science and faith. And it's like there's this conflict between science and faith. And we said that's unfortunate because there's so much more going on in the story. It's not necessarily about science. And it's unfortunate because the people who first wrote down this story, that was more than 3,000 years ago. And they didn't really have a scientific understanding of the world like we do today. And they weren't writing it for scientific reasons. They weren't trying to say, here's a scientific description. Like, here's a textbook chapter on how God created the world. That wasn't their purpose. And so when we get sidetracked by that, we miss so many of the other things in this story. And we closed that sermon last week, and if you weren't there, that's one of those to go back and listen to online because it sort of introduces the whole series. But we closed that. I did that. I showed you a picture, and I want to put that on the screen again. And we said that this is two different ways of representing the night sky. And that one on the left is a Hubble telescope photograph, and the one on the right is Van Gogh's Starry Night. And neither of these representations is more true than the other. And neither is more correct than the other. They're just two different ways of representing or understanding the same thing. But you don't look at them the same way. An astronaut or an astronomer would never try to find stars based on Van Gogh's Starry Night. Like, that would be using it for the wrong purposes. So these are just, one isn't better than the other. It's just they're two different ways of seeing and understanding and representing the same thing. And we said that science is more concerned with this picture, but Genesis 1 through 3 is a whole lot more like this picture. That it was originally written down to give us this image in an ancient Israelite's mindset and worldview of how God created the world. And so we're going to jump into it this week with that in mind. And we're going to read all of Genesis chapter 1 today. Now, for some of you, you grew up in church and or a religious setting, and you've read this so many times, you could come up here and preach like this morning. Like, you could come talk about this passage because you know everything that takes place in there. But I want to just encourage you, don't check out right now. Don't get bored. Don't start doing something else, because we're actually going to read through it, and I'm going to give you a new lens or a new perspective, and I'm going to point out some things in this story that I bet you've never actually seen before. And it's going to be awesome. Your mind is going to be blown this morning. That's a high bar. I shouldn't have said that because I'm not going to meet it. But we're going to try. So be ready. We're going to jump in. We're going to read through the whole thing. I'm just going to make some comments as we go along the way. And then I'm going to raise a lot of questions as we go. And then I'm going to try to pull it all together with one main thing at the very end to try to tell you what I think this story is about. So here's what it starts off with. Starting in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, and we'll put the verses on the screen as we go through them. It says this: In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And this is an introductory statement. We said that last week, that the rest of the chapter is going to tell us how God created the heavens and the earth. This is the way Genesis works. It sort of gives us this introduction. And then the rest of the chapter is going to say, okay, this is how it happened. And we know that because you get to the very end in the first verse in chapter 2. It says, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. In other words, everything we just went through in chapter 1 was the story of how God created all of the heavens and the earth. So this is what happens starting in the very beginning. The next verse, verse 2, tells us how it all starts on what I've called Sunday. Now, the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Now, the reason that I call this Sunday is because that's how the Israelites would have understood it. Because the Israelites didn't name the days the way you and I name the days. They didn't have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You know the way they named the days? They called them first day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, and seventh day. Like, there is no word in the Hebrew language for Wednesday. It's called fourth day. That's the way they call it. So when Jesus and Peter were talking, and Peter was like, hey, I've got some questions about that story. Can we talk and have coffee later this week? Jesus said, yeah, let's do it. I've got fourth day and fifth day open. Let's meet. Like, that's just the way they talked. That's literally how it went. So when it gets to the end of this and it says it was evening and the morning, first day, essentially in our language, that would be, it was evening and morning, Sunday. This is what happened on Sunday. Now, the evening and morning thing feels a little backwards to us, but that's how Hebrew people thought. That was their worldview. For them, a day went from evening to morning, and they still do that today. That's how they celebrate. Sabbath is from like sundown to sundown, Friday night to Saturday night. So that feels a little backwards to us, but that's why it goes evening and morning, and not morning and then evening. But notice, here's what's important. Notice what it says on the very first day, in the very beginning, at the very start, on Sunday morning, here's what it says. It says that the earth was formless and empty. Now, those words are interesting because they don't mean that there wasn't any substance there. It means there was something already there. There was already something there. It was just formless and empty. And these two words are actually used in many other places in the Old Testament to describe a wilderness or to describe a desert or like a barren wasteland. Or sometimes they're even describe a city that's been destroyed by war. And so there was something already there. It's not like there was nothing there. It was just empty space and there was just no matter. There was something, there was an earth, there was a planet, but it was like a desert. It was like a wasteland. It was bare. It had no function or purpose. It was useless at that point. Notice that it's also described as deep, dark waters. It says the Spirit of God was hovering over these deep waters. And that's another image that's really common in the Old Testament. There's this image all throughout the Old Testament that deep oceans or deep waters were a place of chaos and unknown, and that it was almost violent, and sailors feared the deep, dark waters because there was chaos there, and it wasn't tamed. It was wild, and it was something to be feared or something to be scared. And so the picture we've given on the very first day and the very first moment of creation is that there was already an earth, there was already this planet, there was already a place, but the place was characterized by barrenness. It was characterized as a wasteland, as chaotic. And what God begins to do on Sunday is bring order and function to this place. The first way he does that is by separating light from darkness. That's how you bring order to things. When something has no order and is confused and chaos, what do? You separate things. You separate things out. And so God takes this chaos and he separates light from darkness. And then he decides to call it day and night. And essentially what kind of order God is bringing when he separates light and darkness is time. He's giving us a way to measure the days. Now we're going to have day and night, and we'll have this rhythm, and we'll be able to measure time as it moves forward. Now, you might stop here and think, well, scientifically, what does all of this mean? Like, when God said, like, let there be light, did light just appear? Was everything dark before then? Where did it come from? What was the source of this light? Is this the Big Bang? Like, is this what's happening? Is the light, like, did it just come from God or did it come from the sun? And I would say, like, stop thinking that way. Because we find out later, like 4 days later, God creates the sun. So the light didn't come to the sun. That doesn't make sense, because where did the light come from if it wasn't? And how did they have days before there was a sun? The point is, this isn't a scientific story. The ancient Hebrews or ancient Israelites weren't asking those questions. They weren't concerned with those things. That's not the purpose of this account. The purpose of the account is to show what it means when God is giving order and purpose to the world. Now, that'll become a little more clear. So let's keep reading. Let's see what happened on Monday. Here's what it says. Monday, and God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. And so God made the vault, and he separated the water from under the vault from the water above it, and it was so. And God called the vault sky, and there was evening, and there was morning the second day. So here God creates this vault, and I don't really like the word vault. I think of a bank when I hear the word vault. I don't know about you. I think it's a strange term. Essentially, it just means a space. God creates this space that ends up being called sky. And in an ancient understanding, here's how they understood it, and we know this from other Hebrew, Israel, and Israelite documents. We know this from all kinds of other ancient documents from the ancient Near East at that time. They all thought this way. They actually thought there was a ceiling above their heads. And of course that makes sense if you've never been able to get in an airplane, or if you can't measure the atmosphere. If you have no scientific understanding of the world, it's what a 2 or 3 year old's going to think, that there's just the ceiling up there, and it's really blue. And sometimes there's these white things that move across the ceiling. And then there's these lights that move across the ceiling. And it's almost as if, here's what they believe. They believe there was water down here. That would be the oceans and the seas. But there was water above the ceiling as well. There were like big storage tanks of water above the ceiling. And there were little holes in the ceiling. And sometimes the holes would be covered up, and then sometimes they would be open, and rain would come down through them. And somehow this was ordered in such a way that the rain came at times and it nourished the earth, and then at other times it was dry, and that was good, because too much water is a bad thing and not enough water is a bad thing. And so what is God doing on Monday? He's creating this system of weather. He's creating the conditions of the sky to provide nourishment for the earth. Now, let's keep reading. Look at what happens on Tuesday. Tuesday, God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. And then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning the third day, or what we would call Tuesday. So on Tuesday, God separates the land and the seas. So remember, there's water up there, but now there's a sky in between that allows some of the water to come through. And again, we know now that's not really the right, scientific understanding of how rain falls and how it all works. But that doesn't make this account wrong or incorrect. That just shows that they're thinking in the way they knew at that time. But they had water up there, then there was a sky, and then there's land down here, and God separates, or it's almost like he creates this border between the land and the sea. And remember, the sea represented like chaos and wildness. So it's almost like God is now carving out a place that's going to be habitable. And he's provided this border so that the sea will no longer overtake the land. And then it says vegetation appears. Plants and trees appear on the land. And notice a few things about this part. God says that the land is going to produce the vegetation. Now God is incorporating the land in the creative process itself. He gives permission to the land, and he decrees the land to do this, but it's almost as if he's allowing the land to do it, but he's inviting the land to participate and facilitate the creative process itself. And notice what's important about these plants and these trees. They're going to bear fruit. And the fruit's going to have seed in it. And that seems obvious to us because that's all we've ever known, but that's not how it had to be. But the land produces plants and trees that are going to bear fruit. And we'll see the purpose of this fruit down the road. But one of the purposes of this fruit is it's going to have seeds, and that's going to fall to the ground. And that's going to create new trees and new plants. In other words, God doesn't have to keep giving a decree for the land to keep producing trees and plants. The trees and the plants are now going to reproduce and recreate themselves. They're a part of the creative process now as well. And notice how they're going to do it. They're going to do it according to their own kind. Now, this phrase is repeated all over the place, and we're going to see it more often. But essentially what it's saying is, from now on, apple trees are going to produce apple fruit. And apple fruits are going to have apple seeds. And those seeds are going to produce new apple trees. And blueberry bushes are going to recreate and reproduce blueberry bushes. And kudzu is going to recreate and reproduce a lot of kudzu. All the Southerners know what I'm talking about, right? You California people, you don't know what kudzu is, but it reproduces a lot. But the point is, we maybe have never thought about this because it's all we've ever known. It seems logical to us that apple trees reproduce apple trees. But God is creating an orderly system. And he's given function to all the different kinds of trees and all the different kinds of plants. And that function has a purpose. And we're going to see that part of the purpose is to produce food. And that food is going to be consistent and stable because you always know what you're going to get. From an apple tree, you're always going to get apples. You don't have to wonder if an apple tree is going to produce peaches this year or not. There's an order behind it all. Now, let's keep reading. See what happens on Wednesday. Wednesday, God said, "Let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth." And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. And he also made the stars. And God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. So God here does something that's sort of connected to what he did on day one. Here he creates the sun and the moon and the stars. Now, interestingly, they're not actually called the sun and the moon in this account. Those words don't appear here. They're just called lights. Why? Because that's their function. That's what they do. That is the purpose for which they have been created. In fact, the ancient people, the ancient Hebrews, would have never known that the sun was actually a material object that existed millions of miles away, and it was huge, and it was like this planet, but it wasn't really a planet because it was this hot ball of gas, and it gave off all this heat, and it gave off all this light, and that's where the light comes from. It comes from this object. And then the object of the moon isn't actually a light itself. It's this planet that circles the earth, and it just reflects the light that comes from the sun. It's not actually a source of light. They didn't know all that. They didn't understand all that. But again, that doesn't make this incorrect or wrong, because that's not their purpose. That's what they're not trying to explain. What they're trying to explain is that God invested a function into these things, that he gave us this thing that moves across the sky during the day and it gives light to everything. And he gave us the other thing that moves across the sky during the night and it changes shape. It gets smaller, and then it gets bigger. And this happens about every 30 days or so. And what does that do? That creates months. And then the way the sun moves across the sky, and the way it gets lower sometimes, and then it gets higher sometimes, it seems to do this on a pattern, and it redoes it about once every 365 days. And that creates years. So not only is a separation of light and darkness, create days for us to mark time. But the way the sun and the moon work creates weeks and months and years for us to mark time. So much so that the Israelites marked all of their major festivals, all of their major holidays, all of their seasons, all of their understanding of how nature and the natural world worked was based on this rhythm of seasons that all comes right here in this function that God gives to these lights. So, if we could recap what happens on the first 4 days, here's what we'd say. We'll put it on the screen. On Sunday, light and darkness are created, however that works, whatever that means, but they're done so for the purpose of time. On Monday, there are these sky systems that are created, but they're done for the purpose of weather. On Tuesday, there's plants and trees that are created, and they're done for the purpose, we'll learn in a second, of food. And then on Wednesday, the sun and the moon are created, and they're done so for the purpose of giving us seasons. In other words, all of these things are being created and described in Genesis 1 for a purpose, to give order to God's creation. Now, let's look at what happens on Thursday. Thursday, God said, "Let the water teem with living creatures and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky." So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the water teems and that moves about in it, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And then God does something new here. He blessed them. He blessed these creatures. And he said, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water and the seas and let the birds increase on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. So on Thursday, God creates animals in the ocean and birds in the sky. And just like the plants and the trees, they're going to reproduce themselves according to their kind. A swordfish is not going to reproduce a shrimp. A swordfish is going to reproduce a swordfish. And then God makes it super clear. You have a function, and I'm going to declare it. I'm going to say it. Your function is to be fruitful and to multiply and to fill the earth, to fill the skies and to fill the oceans. And then we get to Friday. And Friday is a busy day. So let's look at it in a few different parts. Look at what happens on Friday morning. Friday morning, God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, the wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. And God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. So on Friday morning, God makes animals on the land. Up until this point, he had made the ones up in the sky, and he made the ones in the ocean. And now, not just the ocean and the sky, but the land itself is teeming with animals. And there's three different kinds of animals that that are described here. There's the livestock. Those are animals associated with like the human world, like cattle and goats. Then there's things that move along the ground. Those are probably a reference to like insects and to reptiles and maybe to mice and things like that. And then there's the wild animals, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my, yeah. So there's all kinds of animals. Every kind of animal you can think of is created on Friday morning. Every part of creation is now teeming with life. And then lunchtime comes on Friday. God goes to the break room. He grabs his lunch, pulls out a sandwich, a granola bar, gets a Coke out of the fridge, because God drinks Coke. And he's eating lunch, and a thought occurs to him. And here's what he thinks on Friday at lunchtime. It says, "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.'" Now, who is God talking to here? We're not fully sure. It seems like he could be talking to the angels because he says, let us. There's a question about who's the us. So maybe he's talking to these angels. Maybe it's like his court and they're a part of this creative process and he's sort of double checking with them on everything he does. And at this point, he's like, hey, I got an idea. Let us. Some people think that maybe this is the Trinity right here in Genesis chapter 1. Probably not. Ancient Israelites wouldn't have thought about the Trinity in that way at all. Maybe God is speaking like a king. You know how kings sometimes use the plural we? Like, we have decided when it's really I have decided. Like, maybe that's how God is speaking. But either way, he says, let us produce or make mankind in our image and let them rule. Now, on one hand, this means that making humans comes at the pinnacle of God's work and activity. But before we move on and just talk briefly about that, I just want to point something out. This happens at lunch on Friday, right? A whole lot of work has been done all week long. God has spent a ton of time and energy on a whole bunch of other things before he ever gets to us. In fact, he gives way more time and energy to everything else before he ever gets to us. In fact, the creation account and the story is 5/6 of the way done by the time it gets to humans. It's only lunchtime on Friday that he decides to make humans, and then he's going to do it Friday afternoon. And how many of us do our best work on Friday afternoon? Like, let's be honest here. Your most productive day is Tuesday or Wednesday. It's not Friday afternoon. But that's what happens on Friday afternoon. So God decides to make humans. And maybe that puts us into our perspective, but on Friday afternoon, this is what it says. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, and male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and he said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Now, there's a couple of things that are really significant here. First is that God makes humans in his image. What does that mean? We get a clue a couple of chapters later because it says that Adam has a son. And Adam's son is in his image. And we get that. Because Adam's son is going to look a little bit like Adam. Adam's son is going to talk a little bit like his dad. He's going to have some of the same mannerisms as his dad. He's going to have and do some of the same things as his dad. He's going to act like his dad. He's going to follow some of the same patterns as his dad. He's going to resemble his dad. There are going to be some people who look at Adam's son and say, you are like the spitting image of your father. And it's almost as if right here when God creates humans, that's what he's doing. He's saying, I'm going to make you in my image. You will resemble me. That you are someone that if God had a body, this is what I would look like. If God had a heart, this is what it would be. If God had a mind and a soul, if God had a character that lived itself out in physical, material ways right here in my creation, this is what it would look like. You are going to resemble me. That's part of what it means to be made in the image of God. But it's not just resembling God, it's also representing God. Because he goes on to show that being made in his image is directly linked to the function he gives us, because he gives us a specific function. Part of that is repeated from what he gave to the birds and all the other animals. He says, you know, be fruitful and increase, fill the earth. But then there's something unique and separate that he only gives to humans. He says, subdue the earth. And then rule over the earth. All the other, you are going to subdue it and rule it. Now, what exactly does that mean? We're going to tease that out over the next few weeks because we get a lot more clues in the next chapter. But it's almost as if you could step back and ask the question, wait a second, it seems like God is the one who subdues and rules the earth. I mean, essentially what God has been doing up until now has been subduing the earth. I mean, he's been taking this earth that's wild and chaotic and doesn't have any order, and he's been creating order and function, and he's giving function to all the pieces and all the places, and he's setting everything in their proper place. That's what God has been doing, but now he's saying there's still more subduing to be done, and you are going to do it. And God, we think of, is the ruler of the earth, right? But God is now saying, you are going to rule the earth. You are going to subdue and rule the earth for me, with me, in place of me, on behalf of me. You are my image, and I am now putting you on this earth to represent me and to subdue it and rule it for me. In the ancient world, kings oftentimes set up statues of themselves in faraway lands that were a part of their realm that they oversaw and that they ruled over, but they did it because oftentimes they wouldn't have a chance to be there very much, but they would set up a statue or an image of themselves to remind the people in that part of the realm that the king still rules over that place. And it's almost as if that's what God is doing right here. I am putting my image on this earth, and you will represent me and rule over the earth for me. Now, let's read on, and then we'll kind of tie this all together, because this is how the chapter ends in Genesis chapter 1. It says, Friday at closing time, this happens. Then God said, I give you, and he's speaking to humans here, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it, and they will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. So a couple things to notice real quickly about this last part. God gives us provision for what he's asked us to do. You're going to rule over the earth. You're going to subdue the earth. You're going to fill it and multiply it. And now I'm going to make sure you're able to do that. And so all of those plants and all of those trees and all of the fruit that they're going to produce, that's for you. The function of that is for you and for all the animals and everything that has life in it. That's to provide food for you. So those have a huge function. Now, just one quick thing to note. Notice he doesn't say that all the animals are to be food for you. Now, if you like a good steak or a good burger, I'm with you. I do too. And you need to know that later in the story, God makes provision for humans to eat meat. But we almost need to just stop right here and realize that wasn't God's original intention. God's original intention was to say, all these plants, they're for you. That's your food. So if you're a vegetarian, maybe you are a witness, and I don't say that in a joking way, but maybe you are a witness in some small way to what God's original intention was for our earth, for there to actually be harmony between all of his life. And maybe that points forward to where the prophets speak of one day the wolf lying down with the lamb and the lion lying down with the calf. Maybe there is supposed to be harmony between all of God's creatures. Now, he does all this, and then he stands back. It's 4:59. He's about to punch the clock out, and he looks at everything he's done for the whole week. And it was a six-day work week. Like, he started Sunday morning bright and early, and it was very good. Like, he's just, and that doesn't mean it was perfect. And that doesn't mean it was complete. It means he's satisfied with the work that he's done. It means that everything is working according to its purposes and has come to fruition according to how God intended it. And that's really what this passage is all about. I want to suggest to you, and here's sort of the summary statement of what creation in Genesis is. Creation, and we'll put this on the screen, in Genesis 1, is God's work of establishing order and function in the cosmos. That it's less about material creation. Material creation is like, where did these things come from? Where did certain substances or elements or molecules or material objects, exactly when and how were they created? That's a scientific question that Genesis isn't really trying to answer. This account is a whole lot more concerned with functional origins, not scientific origins. Functional origins are like, why did God make the sun? Well, why are there plants? Well, why did God set a boundary between the waters and the land? Why did God separate those things? Because that's what's most important to the writer of this account. He's not as concerned with, like, did God snap his fingers and bobcats just appeared? Like, how did that work? It's more, in fact, look at the verbs all throughout the passage. It's about God separating and God filling, and God forming, and God allowing, and God saying to things, and God naming things. Those are like ordering functions. That's the kind of creative work that God is doing. That's the kind of purpose that God has. And when he sits back, he's able to say, everything is working according to the purposes I've given it. And so what was the ultimate purpose? Here's what I think it was. God's ultimate purpose in all of his creative activity from Sunday to Friday was this: to make a place where he could live with and work with and relate to the people that he has created. That during the creation week, God is making a home where he can live with and work with and relate to the people that he has created. That this is essentially God making his home story. And that's very different than God making a house story. You see, you could ask me, I live on South Claremont Drive in a house on a certain address there. And you could ask me, when was your house manufactured? And I would say, well, in 1951, it was built by a bunch of people who put up some stud walls and they put a roof on it. And I could tell you about the property, and I could tell you about the plumbing lines that were laid and the electrical lines that were laid and the floor that was laid. And I could tell you about all the substances that make up the house. But if you ask me a different question, when did that become your home? Well, I would give you a different answer. I say, well, actually on December 28th, 2008, we drove up, and it was bare and empty. The walls were bare and empty. The garage was bare and empty. And when we went into the house, we decided which room was going to do which function. And we said, this is going to be Townsend's room. That's going to be your room, and this is going to be our room. And this is going to be like the master living room. This is where we're going to have, and this is going to be the dining room, and this is where we're going to make food. This is going to be the kid. Like, we started assigning functions to all the rooms. And then we started putting furniture in all the rooms. And the furniture are what really brings alive all the functions, because once you put the bed in there and the dresser in there, like, it's clear this is going to be the bedroom. And then we started painting the walls, and we gave everything a purpose, and we bought a new dining table because it's not really a home until you can invite people over to eat, right? And then we put food in the fridge, and it's not really a home until you have food in the fridge. And then that spring, we landscaped, and we put shrubs in, and we put a garden in and a compost pile, and then I mowed the lawn. That's when it's home, right? When the man mows the lawn, it becomes home, right? But you see, answering the question, how did the property become a home, is very different than answering the question, how did the property become a house? And Genesis 1 is a whole lot more concerned with how this place became a home than it is with how it became a house. Which makes it entirely possible, as one Old Testament scholar has written, sort of suggested, that this is the way to understand it. Put a quote on the screen. Perhaps the 7 days represent the period of transition from the material cosmos that has been prepared over the ages to being the place where God is going to relate to his people. That the 7 days are related to the home story, not the house story. the ordering and establishing of function, not the production of material objects. Maybe what we have in Genesis is God telling us how he made this place to be a home for you and me and him to live together. Now, I know that raises all kinds of questions, and we're going to tease those out and understand them a little more in the weeks to come. And that's a really big concept, but I want to close with one final question for you to just make this practical, and I'll put it on the screen. What is your function in God's plan for the world? You see the sun and the moon and the stars, the animals, they all have a role. And humanity in general has a role to extend God's goodness and his order and his rule and his reign over the entire cosmos. So what's your specific role? I mean, have you ever connected being a student to that bigger role? Have you ever connected being a parent, being a salesperson, being a business person, being a teacher, being an engineer? Have you ever connected your identity and your vocation and your career and what it is that you do to God's bigger role and function for us in the entire cosmos? Because he has a specific role for you and for me, and we fit in this. And so this isn't a story about what just happened a long time ago. This is your story and my story, and God saying, I have prepared a place for you and I to work together to bring my rule and my reign in your school, in your workplace, in Denver, in your city, in whatever sphere of influence I have placed you in. You have a specific function and a specific role. What is it? And are you willing to embrace it? Let me pray. Father God, I pray that as we enjoy the sun and as we enjoy spring and as we enjoy rain when it falls and the grass that grows and even the food that you have provided for us, as we enjoy all of those things, may we not forget that they all have a function in your ordered system, and that you are beautiful and glorious as a result of that. And may we too reflect deeply on our function, because you made us to represent you, to resemble you, to be your presence here on this earth. And may we embrace that as your creatures, as those made in your image and your likeness. We pray this in your name. Amen.